You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
I'm Molly Wansell.
And I'm Jeffrey Wansell.
And for the last 16 years or thereabouts, we have been having lunch every Saturday, and often our conversation turns to murder.
And that's what's prompted us to launch this true crime podcast called Blood Ties.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wansell and I'm here with my father, Jeffrey Wansell.
Hello everyone, welcome back. Thank you for listening. It's always wonderful to know you're there. So Mo, how's your week today? This week?
This week. All the weeks of the weeks are pretty much the same, I think.
Yes, they are a bit.
No real news, just working away.
Yeah.
All fine. Coping, just about getting through this bit really, isn't it?
I think it's all about getting through. One or two people seem to have caught the disease, unfortunately, but touch wood, nobody dreadfully. Because I'm of a certain age, more of my contemporaries are likely to catch it than...
I think more of my contemporaries are likely to catch it, surely, because they're like out doing things they shouldn't do.
But mine have been.
I think it's just everywhere. So it's everywhere. Hard to.
Well, I go out once a day, and for a walk around the block, basically, and otherwise I'm here.
Hmm.
That's it. That's the limit of it. I've had as we've been talking about. I've had my first Pfizer. And now they're arguing about whether or not I should have to wait 6 weeks for my second Pfizer.
Well, at least you've had the first one, so whatever happens, you'll get it, whether it's 4 weeks, 6 weeks.
Whatever weeks.
Has it been 11 days since you had it? Are you...
Oh, yes, I'm more than.
You're...
It's been 15 days.
So you're 60%...
Whatever, yeah.
That's great.
Something like that.
And it didn't make you feel weird or anything?
No. Dr. Fauci apparently had his second, was very ill for a day.
Yeah, I've heard that the second one makes you feel weirder than the first one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised.
But that's fine if he's getting vaccinated.
Well, that's the important point. I've been doing a thing. I did a thing last night and the middle of the week, I did a Zoom, a Ratigan play called Heart to Heart, which he wrote for television. And I introduced it and I topped and tailed it. And I ended it both by saying, I did it twice, once for one group, once for another group. I ended them both by saying, if you're offered the vaccine, please take it.
You
know. Yeah.
Definitely. So this week, we're not releasing a new episode. We're re-releasing an old episode. We're going to do this a little bit more because we found that quite a lot of the things that we've covered are now being dramatised because we obviously have an eye for a... true crime dramatisation.
Well, we certainly seem to.
Yeah.
This one is what we called the Bullseye Killer.
Yes, which has been released on ITV called The Pembrokeshire Murders.
That's right.
Yeah, and I actually haven't watched it, but one or two people have written to us on Instagram asking about it and saying, have you done it? And I said, yes. And so I think it's a good idea if we re-release these, because obviously our back catalogue is now really only available to our Patreon members. And so some people may have not heard it, so we're happy
and
to
so what we're doing is re-releasing the Bullseye Murderers, always known to me, because I've done it.
We called him the Bullseye Killer, I think.
Bullseye Killer. I've done it.
You've done it for TV as well.
I've done it for television, yeah. It's a very, very good case.
But I haven't yet watched the dramatisation.
I haven't. I got caught up by watching the four-part Netflix, The Night Stalker.
Oh, yeah.
Richard Ramirez.
Apparently, that's too scary. I can't. I probably
it's very good. I watched it all.
I mean, there's just so much to watch, isn't there? We will get round to the Pembrokeshire Murders.
But, yes, and I'd be happy to do Richard Ramirez too, because I have done him before for television.
Great, well, let's do that. I mean, we might as well. It's, you know, it's a talking point when people are watching these things anyway. It's good to...
Well, I heartily recommend The Night Stalker by Netflix. They have really got everybody. The two cops... the survivor. Oh, it's a beautiful piece of work. I mean, it is perfection in that sort of true crime documentary. It's brilliantly done and very compelling. So yeah, I would recommend that.
Great. So yeah, we probably will do a bit of re-releasing, but we'll also add some new interesting things to our Patreon, which we'll talk about over the next few weeks. And yeah, please do go and check out our Patreon, and thank you to all the people who are already members. We appreciate you
very
enormously
much.
But we appreciate all of you.
Absolutely, we appreciate everyone
hugely,
and we are so grateful to you for listening. So this week, Mo, is
this is The Bullseye Killer.
John William Cooper, often called the Bullseye Killer, was born on the 3rd of September 1944 in Milford Haven in Wales. He was not a particularly bright boy. He left school at 15, went into various trades, bit of upholstery, carpentry, and then went into the building trade. He also worked on the fields, in the fields as a casual labourer in Pembrokeshire, that beautiful piece of the Welsh coast. Which is very, very beautiful too. In 1966, at the age of 22, he married his wife, Patricia. She was the same age as he was, and they'd known each other since they were 12. They had two children, a boy called Adrian, now Andrew, and Teresa. He was a gregarious man, Cooper, and to the outsider, kind of rough and ready, cheerful enough. But he was also a bit of a gambler. He began working at the Pembrokeshire Gulf Oil Refinery as a welder's mate in 1978. But in 1979, Cooper had what you could only describe as an absolute windfall. He won £94,000 in a spot the ball competition.
Wow.
As well as a £4,000 Austin Princess car.
Spot the ball competition,
yes.
What's that?
Well, you have a picture of a football field, usually the goal.
Yeah.
And you have to put where you think the ball was. They take the ball out of the photograph.
Ah, okay.
And you have to put, you think the ball, so you put a little X.
Ah, okay. And he got it bang on.
He got it right and won £94,000. He was working as a welder's mate. He gave £1,000 each to 10 family members and took his wife on holiday to the United States. He said afterwards, "I don't worry about jealousies. I don't consider me or my wife changed at all. But people's attitude to us has changed." Anyway, he left the factory, contracted himself to a local farmer. But Cooper was not the sharpest knife in the canteen of cutlery, and he quickly ran through the money. He gambled it, drank it.
I mean, it sounds awful to say, but actually prize money like that, if you actually practically think about how much life costs, like that wouldn't last you that long.
No. But I mean, if you win the Euro Millions now, I mean, that's life changing, isn't it? But £94,000.
You've still got to work. And
yeah. But
unless you made very clever investments.
By the time his son, Andrew, left home in 1982, he was describing his father as a violent, loud, aggressive man. And in 1983, believe it or not, to sustain an extravagant lifestyle, he turned to burglary. He was relentless. He would almost always break in when there was nobody in the house, but not always. He was a frightening figure. He often wore a balaclava and brandished a sawn-off shotgun. He was a big, bulky man anyway. Big, round head. And just before Christmas, on the 22nd of December, 1985, He broke into a house called Scoveston Park near Milford Haven. It was owned by a local wealthy couple, Richard Thomas and his sister Helen. Richard Thomas was not at the house at the time. Cooper thought there was only Helen. After breaking in, he discovered that Helen was there, but all of a sudden, Richard turns up, gets out of the car. Cooper shoots him in the head and the stomach, and eventually tied up Helen, almost certainly having assaulted her in some way, and shot her in the head. He then set fire to the house to cover his tracks. He lived less than a mile away. Originally, when the police arrived at this dreadful scene of two murders, they thought it had been a burglary gone wrong. But Cooper's family rallied round and they gave him an alibi.
But it was a burglary gone wrong.
It was a burglary gone wrong, but they couldn't find the burglar.
Okay.
Because Cooper's family had all rallied round to give him an alibi.
Okay.
History doesn't relate exactly how much money this particular burglary raised, but there had been at least 30 other burglaries, all of which had raised money.
Did he take cash and jewellery and everything?
Whatever he could. 4 years later, well, three and a bit years later, in May 1989, he appears on the ITV programme Bullseye with Jim Bowen, which is basically a dart game. You throw darts at a board.
Yeah, you won prizes for throwing darts
at
a board,
right,
didn't you?
Except he didn't win any prizes. He just appeared.
You were in a team of two, weren't you?
I can't remember.
It was a sort of game show that was on Saturday at like 6 p.m.
It was very famous. Popular.
And it had a theme tune that was like... I'm thinking of the snookering theme tune. And it had a sort of mascot called Bully that walked across the screen.
A bullseye.
Yeah.
Well, when he appeared, and I've looked at the video of his appearance, he was arrogant, posing, and to some extent conveyed the fact that he thought he could get away with anything and do anything, which to some extent was confirmed by the fact that no one had approached, although the police had interviewed Cooper, no one had come to put their hand on his collar. He was, as far as anyone was concerned, just a local labourer who'd had a bit of good luck. And less than 5 weeks later, Peter and Gwenda Dixon were on holiday in Pembrokeshire from their home in Witney in Oxfordshire. Peter was a former RAF flight lieutenant and... his wife, Gwenda, was a secretary. And they were camping. And there's a very scenic path on the Pembrokeshire coast with absolutely spectacular views over the Irish Sea. And this was their last morning. And they collapsed the tent and let it dry out. And they set off for what they called their final walk. It was June the 29th. About half a mile from where they'd camped, they entered a wooded area and were accosted by none other than John Cooper, brandishing a shotgun. He made Peter Dixon give him his PIN number and his bank card. And again, history does not precisely relate. He shot Gwenda Dixon and Peter Dixon in the face. He left, and this gives you some indication, he left their bodies tied up in a ravine on the right-hand side of the coastal path, and Gwenda's body was naked from the waist down. Cooper then used the bank card to withdraw £300. from Peter Dixon's account. Nobody missed the Dixons for 2 days until finally their son Tim asked the police to investigate, and in early July, the 5th of July, their bodies were found. 6,000 people were interviewed, but no one was able to identify Cooper. When questioned about he'd stolen a wedding ring from Peter Dixon,
and when he was just took £300.
Yeah, well, he had to go to an ATM.
I know, it doesn't really seem worth it.
No, I you can say that a lot about John William Cooper. You can seldom understand what on earth he was thinking.
Why you'd kill two people for £300?
Well, people have been killed for less.
I know, but
you know it is. Anyway, he'd stolen a wedding ring, and when the police asked where he'd got it, he said it was his. And once again, the family supported him. So now, John Cooper has got away with two double murders. He's still committing burglary. No one particularly draws attention to him until one day in March 1996, a good 7 years after the Dixons had met their death. Five local teenagers are walking through the fields near Milford Haven when all of a sudden they're confronted by John Cooper wearing a balaclava and brandishing a shotgun. They were clearly terrified. He takes one of the 16-year-old girls away and rapes her at knife point. He then sexually assaults a 15-year-old and finally demands money from the rest of the group. Why they didn't run, I think he probably told them.
He probably was threatening them.
Threatened them. He fired the shotgun in the air as a warning shot as he left.
So he didn't take money from them?
Not very much. May have been a few quid,
so
literally.
His motive's changing.
His motive all along was violence, really.
Mm.
There are very few, I'm glad to say, very few Welsh serial killers. The only other one that immediately occurs to me is Peter Moore, who lived in North Wales and owned, known as the Man in Black, who also incidentally killed four people. Once again, Cooper gets off scot-free, even though Crime Watch run a special on the Dixon murders and get 400 calls. No one identifies John Cooper. He always, you know, he was still robbing, still burglaring. He would usually target single females in houses and attack during the evening wearing a balaclava and carrying his said sawn-off shotgun. In 1998, he committed another armed burglary. He held up a teacher called Sheila Clark with a shotgun in her home in Sardis in Pembrokeshire. He tied her up, but she struggled free and pushed an alarm panic button that she'd had installed in her house. Cooper fled. But soon afterwards, he obviously could describe him, Cooper. Soon afterwards, Cooper was arrested for this robbery and for a string of others. And when his house was searched, they found over 500 keys from various houses in the cesspit, some of which fitted the doors of the houses he's attacked, and buried under a duck run, a small duck pen for ducks, the police also found another shotgun, carefully preserved in oil and rags. Cooper was charged. And on the 10th of December 1998, he was jailed for 16 years for armed robbery and 30 other burglaries.
No murder charge.
No murder charge. None. Because he'd used a sawn-off shotgun and attacked women who were at home alone, he was considered of interest in the Dixon and Scoverstone Park. But No one connected it to him, and Cooper refused to make any sort of statement at all. Indeed, he went to jail, as we know. And in 2006, Difford Powys Police launched a cold case inquiry into the two double murders called Operation Ottawa, as well as the rape and sexual assault on the teenagers in Milford Haven. They spent years going through cataloguing material. Also, indeed, at one point in 2008, Cooper was taken to a police station in Ammanford, where he was questioned for 4 days about the double murders. The police asked their forensic service to conduct further examinations of Cooper. But in January 2009, John Cooper was released from prison after serving 10 years for burglary and armed robbery.
Oh my goodness.
And his wife, Patricia, died shortly afterwards.
Of natural causes, I hope.
It was, yes. But a clever police officer found the bullseye footage of him appearing on television and compared it to the artist's impression that the teacher from Sardis had given the police, and found it an almost identical match. In a way, although it's terrible to say it, in a way, Cooper's bravado, his braggadocio in appearing on television was in the end
his downfall.
To be his downfall.
Good.
Eventually, in April and May, he's been released in January, February. Sorry, in January 2009 he's released, but in April and May, more forensic evidence is unearthed. Better forensic testing,
better science, better technology.
And they were looking for fibre matches, but they discovered a spot of blood belonging to Peter Dixon in a pair of shorts that Cooper wore. Clearly suggested the shorts were Peter Dixon's and were taken from his rucksack after Cooper had killed him and Gwenda. And Cooper had kept the shorts, clearly as a trophy.
Mm. Like the keys.
Yeah. It was found... blood DNA belonging to Dixon was found on the breech end of the gun and on the barrel of the gun. They hadn't been able to establish that before, but clearly it was literally in his face. It blew his face away. And there were fibre matches, particularly from gloves. So he was linked to the two double murders, the rape, sexual assault and the robbery of the teenagers. And on the 13th of May 2009... he'd been free for 4 months. He was arrested on suspicion of the 1980s murders and the sexual assault. In his car, a rope, gloves and ordnance survey map of parts of Pembrokeshire were found. Even when faced with all this forensic evidence, Cooper utterly refused to admit his guilt. "Got nothing to do with me. You'll have to prove it." But he did admit, though he didn't realise the significance of the admission, that the shorts did belong to him.
Okay.
Where clearly they didn't belong to him, and they were actually Peter Dixon's. On the 21st of March 2010, Cooper's trial is supposed to begin at Swansea Court, Crown Court. It was postponed until October, and then to the 21st of March 2011. He was facing the charges, two double murders, rape, sexual assault, etc. The trial lasted 9 weeks, and Cooper steadfastly throughout...
Denied everything.
He pleaded, of course, not guilty. The jury took 3 days to come to a verdict. But on the 26th of May 2011, and remember, he'd committed these double murders back in the 80s, he was found guilty on all charges and received a whole life term of imprisonment. He naturally enough appealed. Oh, he would, wouldn't he? But I'm pleased to say, I'm delighted to say, that in November 2012, his appeal was turned down by the Court of Appeal in London. He has since been diagnosed as an outright psychopath. I'm not in any doubt that he was, but he did escape justice for darn near 20 years.
Indeed, committed so many more crimes because he was out as well. No, I know he didn't kill anyone, not that but we he, know, he not, burgled all the people still.
Well, in the period between January and May, when he was finally arrested in 2009, he didn't have a great deal of time to commit many more burglaries.
No, but I meant in the time that he committed the murders before he went to prison for the burglary. He did more burglary.
He does more burglary, yes. I mean, the police only charged him with a notional 30. I mean, there were probably 60. It might have been 150.
How are there 500 keys?
Well, exactly. Yeah, certainly an awful lot of keys. But you have to ask yourself about Cooper. He was well known in the community. It's not a big place, that bit of Pembrokeshire.
How did he get away with it?
How did he get away with it? One ruse he used was to hide his balaclava and shotgun in hedges in the area, which he used as a sort of safe. He used to put his kind of rape kit or his...
You're right, though, because those small communities tend to... Yeah. The only thing I can suggest,
and I'm not attributing anything to anyone, but I can't believe that someone wasn't at least suspicious of Cooper. I mean, he'd had all that money from Spot the Ball.
Maybe people were scared of him.
Maybe. But it's interesting that Crime Watch didn't turn up anybody, and that's an anonymous tip. When finally Peter Moore, the North Wales serial murderer, was caught when the police set up an anonymous tip line for gays. And it was anonymous gay who rang up and said, I've been assaulted by that man and I'll tell you where his house is.
Oh, that was good.
So, but this case I often find fascinating because, I mean, I talk about hiding in plain sight.
Yeah. And also...
I mean, it's not...
It's one thing for a burglary to go wrong and to murder the people, but then to just change up to just waiting in the forest for two unsuspecting walkers.
No.
For £300.
It's indicative of bloodlust.
What is it, just that after he shot those people in the house, he was like, oh, actually, I prefer, for violence.
I think there are two things that go perhaps less than often said about Cooper. One was that it was clearly a sexual motive to a lot of these crimes.
Yeah.
It's no accident that two of the victims were women, nor is it any accident that the rape and sexual assault on the teenagers in Milford Haven. There was a sexual element in Cooper. There's no doubt of that.
Yeah.
And there's also that psychopathic lack of empathy, that colossal disregard for anyone else's life. The only life that matters is the murderer's.
Mm.
And that is extraordinary. But there is another, I find, wonderful parallel to Cooper, because there's a very famous American serial killer called Rodney Alcala, who was always known as the dating game killer, because he went on one of those shows when you were supposed to, you know...
Like Blind Date,
go out on a date.
Well, nowadays it's called...
And the
one with the lights.
And the woman who'd chosen him, in the end, refused to go on a date because he was too creepy.
Oh.
Which was actually very wise of her, because he was in the midst of a sustained killing spree in the late 70s.
While he went on the programme?
Yes. Wow. Oh, yes. Yeah. But I do like it. It's that sense of look at me, isn't it? I think that's what makes the Bullseye Killer such a good name for him.
Mm.
Look at me. Aren't I clever? I can get away with it. What's more, I've got away with it for 20 years.
Maybe after he did the Spot the Ball thing, he just thought, that's it, I'm a genius.
Well, I can do anything I want.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Not because of the money, just because imagine if he did actually manage to pinpoint exactly where the ball was.
Yeah, I don't know.
What are the odds to that?
Oh, colossal.
As a ginormous.
Colossal, yeah. But I suppose it's the ego that gets in the way, isn't it? That there is John Cooper thinking that he'll... Oh, I'm going to go on Bullseye and I'm going to win it. He didn't, actually. It was rather a feeble effort. He couldn't hit the bullseye at all. And he was easily beaten. But it's as if He didn't mind. He loved the notoriety. It was, oh, you know, I want it.
Well, we've talked about that before.
Imagine what he must have been like in the local pub. He must have been absolutely, you know.
Awful.
Terrible.
Braggy.
Bragging, you know. Mm. Swaggering about, flashing the cash, which of course has now been raised by burglary, rather than spot the ball.
Very odd.
I'm not saying for a moment that spot the ball ruined him, but it certainly gave him a taste for a life he couldn't afford as a welder's mate.
Never a good thing.
In the oil refinery.
I didn't know anything about him, so thanks, Dad.
No, it's a very, very interesting case. And partly also because it's the contradiction between this terribly dark figure, Cooper was clearly a very frightening figure, and the absolute beauty of the Pembrokeshire coastline at that point. I mean, absolutely beautiful. And you have, I think Conan Doyle once said, or had Sherlock Holmes say, there's more evil in the rural retreats than there are in the alleyways of East London. Mm. And it's, I think it's true. And that, and Cooper is a very fine example of that.
That's true.
And he's been, the show, I've done one television on him. He is still protesting his innocence.
Well, he can do that from inside prison.
Now he's 75.
Gosh, well.
And still in jail, and there's no likelihood of him ever leaving, no. I'm pleased to say.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. But, well, thank you very much. There we go, the bullseye
killer. It's a very interesting and rather nuanced case.
Well, I hope everyone enjoyed that.
Me too. He's not called the Bullseye Killer on television. He's called the Pembrokeshire Murders. But because he was based in Pembrokeshire, which is a very, very beautiful part of Wales. I never got to it. I was always seemed to see the nasty bits of Wales.
That's not true. When we used to go to my godmother's house in
Wales. Oh, Ruthin, yes.
That's nice.
That got flooded.
I think she probably is flooded.
Yeah, it got flooded this week.
Yeah.
By
the weather. Storm Christoph.
Yes.
Christoph Valks. Christoph Storm.
Yeah.
Christoph Storms.
Yes. Well, I saw an awful lot of Cardiff and Barry Island and Penarth and the valleys and things like that.
Well, bits of Wales are incredibly beautiful.
Yes, absolutely. But you can't go to them now.
Well, not at the moment.
Not at the moment. You have to stay at home and save lives and protect the NHS.
Stay home. Well, Jeffrey's doing that. He's staying home and having his vaccine, so he's covered.
Well...
doing all the right things.
I hope so. There's nothing else you can do. You just have to grin and bear it. Really.
I think there's a good, talking of other things to watch that might not be totally murder related, there's some Annie Leibovitz thing on, or something on Netflix. What is it?
Don't know.
That I want to watch.
There is some... I've seen lots of really good stuff. I'm looking forward to all manner of things.
Yeah. And next week we'll be doing yet more TV-related subjects.
Yes.
Which will be really good. I can't find it. I'll find it for next time.
Never mind.
Never mind. Well, thank you all very much for listening. And as ever, thank you to all the people who make all of the things possible for us. Our producer, Sam Brain, who puts it all together and makes it all happen. Audio Boom for hosting us. My brother, Dan, who does the music. My friend, George, who drew our caricature. To Jeffrey, who tells the story. And to you, the listeners, thank you so much.
Yes, thank you all so much. I should also add to thank Molly, because this was... her idea, and it's been brilliant. I can't tell you how excited it is. And as I always say at the end of these programs, please do be careful out there.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.